Yes, indeed. Good morning. I am joined this morning from the University of Minnesota by Julie Weisenhorn. Julie, good morning.
Hey, Denny. Good morning to you.
It's, well, we're getting some showers here in our neighborhood. I don't know if it's raining where you are.
Yeah, thunderstorms.
A few thunderstorms. It's amazing. Now, again, every area is different, and somebody who lives in a certain part of CCO land who is inundated and their lawns are still mushy, I'm amazed at how fast it dries out here.
Yeah, that's a good sign, I guess, because if we were sitting in, you know, continually wet conditions, it could be really tough on our landscapes and tough on us, too.
Yeah.
So it is good to see that things did dry out a little bit before we got this next flush of rain.
Absolutely. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, you want to talk with Julie by phone or text, here's the number to do it, 651-461-9226, 651-461-9226. Texter says this a moment ago, our native lilac bushes have brown leaves. What can I use to prevent further die-off and spread? What causes this? I guess there should have been a period there. What causes this and how to prevent it? We have dozens of native lilacs throughout our 3 acres in Anoka County. Not all of the bushes show signs of it yet.
Well, it could be a number of things. So when you think about, when you have issues like that with particularly long-lived plants like lilacs, they're not actually native to Minnesota, but they will experience leaf spot diseases, which can cause the leaves to turn brown or turn yellow and drop off. And you have to think about the conditions that they're growing in. So last few years, we had a lot of stress on our woody plants, trees, shrubs, vines, woody vines. And then we came into this year, we had a mild winter, and then we came into a lot of rain and pretty cool and very windy conditions. So the cool, windy, wet conditions and having stressed plants coming into our season are a really great formula for all sorts of stress on our plants. For example, we mentioned the lilacs. Lilac powdery mildew might be worse on common lilacs this year because of the conditions. That wind is blowing spores around, the moisture is carrying it, the rain is carrying it. They're creating a really great condition for growing fungal and bacterial leaf spot diseases. I'm guessing that might be the case with these lilacs. And the easiest thing to do is, if you have dieback like that, is to clean it up when it drops to the ground and get it away from the plants. And then to be sure that you're treating these plants with a little extra TLC. Maybe they need to be mulched. Maybe they're not mulched. That helps a lot with protecting the roots. Maybe they need to be fertilized. A lot of times we kind of forget about lilacs and forget to fertilize them. And just giving them a little bit more TLC so that you can help them get through this more stressful time. And now we have plants that are also going into flood damage too. And I wanted to call out a really great webpage that we have on our yard and garden page called How to Manage Flood Damage to Trees. It's a very comprehensive webpage. It talks about timing of flooding, effects of flooding, and how to help trees recover from flooding. So that could be the case too. Those lilacs may be in poorly drained soil, and that soil is holding a lot of water, and those shrubs are really under stress now, but in the opposite way that they were last year. Last year was drought, this year it's wetness. So I would say check that, clean up the leaves that drop, and then also be sure that you've pruned those lilacs to encourage good airflow and light to get to the canopies.
Speaking of fertilizing, I see a question about when is the best time to fertilize evergreens?
Evergreens can be fertilized throughout the season. You want to stop fertilizing any woody plants, trees and shrubs, around August, because we don't want to encourage new growth that fertilizer might cause or might, you know, prompt. So we want to cut back on fertilizing trees and shrubs in August and allow those plants to then gradually go into dormancy without a lot of new growth on them, which wouldn't survive the winter.
Since this is our Smart Garden show, I noticed a text from someone hoping you will mention the 27th Annual Minnesota Water Garden Society Pond and Garden Tour.
Yeah, that sounds like fun.
July 27 and 28.
Great.
So there you go. Annual Minnesota Water Garden Society. I'm sure you can Google that. No, let's see. No, it does not.
Okay.
But you can visit their website, mwgs.org.
There you go. Yeah,
and
they'll
let you know
the details.
Here's an interesting text about lawns. Does mowing your grass when it's wet have any positive or negative impacts?
It has a negative impact, and that is in compacting the soil. So as you roll your mower, big or small, back and forth over your lawn, you're compressing and compacting that soil. And that can also damage the crowns of the grass plants. We don't think about grass plants as really having a crown, but they do. And it sits right at the soil surface. And as you roll over that and those plants are wet, the soil they do. And it sits right at the soil surface. And as you roll over that and those plants are wet, the soil is wet, you're compacting that down and that can affect the crowns as well. So you want to wait until your lawn is dried out, at least the top inch or so, and then go ahead and do your mowing.
Julie, about lawns, this is the time of year, and of course, looking at that forecast with 90s predicted today and tomorrow, and actually close to that on Monday. My lawn, it looks like it's going dormant. That's kind of typical, isn't it?
Yeah, that's typical for our grasses. Our grasses in Minnesota are cool season grasses, meaning that they grow actively in the spring and then again in the fall. So that makes fall a really great time to do a lot of maintenance on your lawn, such as aeration, fertilization, also treatment of any broadleaf weeds, because they're doing the same thing. They're actively growing, and that's a good time to do that as well. Keep mowing your lawn. And so, now they become dormant. They're moving into dormancy, and that means that they're not growing as much. So you may be able to cut back on your mowing as we move into warmer weather. And your lawn may not look quite as bright green. We've had these very vivid lawns this spring.
Yeah, for sure.
With all the rain. And now you might see it start to kind of dim down a little bit. And that's normal. That's just the plant not really putting out a lot of new growth. And so raise your mower. That's a really easy thing to do. It's a really important thing to do to allow for as much of those grass blades to be present and to be photosynthesizing, getting as much energy as possible down into the roots and creating a really good, strong lawn that's going to endure tougher conditions that it might have in the future.
Excellent. If you're just joining us, Julie Weisenor from the U of M answering those lawn and garden questions on our Smart Garden Show. Call or text Julie, 651-461-9226. Right now in the Twin Cities, you could be experiencing some showers or thunderstorms. Our current temperature reading now in the metro, 76 degrees. Stay with us. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. Welcoming your calls or your text messages for Julie Weisenhorn this morning from the U of M. 651-461-9226. Julie, as usual, we have callers, we have texters.
And
in a moment, I want to ask you about the Abiders when you guys are playing. I think it's soon. Let's grab a phone call. Dorothy is first up here from Minneapolis. Dorothy, hi. What's your question, please?
Good morning. I'm late in trimming off the old blooms of my lilac. I've got two Korean lilac shrubs. Is it too late to do it? And what's going to happen now? How would I trim them now when I'm so late?
So, good question, Dorothy. Lilacs need to be trimmed within roughly 2 to 3 weeks after they bloom because they start to set buds for next year. So if you are late in pruning them off, you can kind of back up in your calendar and think about when they were last blooming. You may be pruning off some flower buds for next year. You might have a reduced amount of bloom next year, but you should take them off. You can simply deadhead them and then shape the tree as needed. If you've got kind of a wanky branch sticking out, you might want to cut that one back. I know Korean lilacs usually have a really nice rounded form, So go ahead and prune off some of those dead lilacs at this time. You can use a shear, whether it's a manual or electric. That works really well. Or you can just go ahead and, like I do, just pick through it with a pruners and just snip those off.
All right, very good. Thank you, Dorothy. Let's get another phone call in here. David is calling in from Madison Lake, I believe. Hi, David. What is your question, please?
Yes, I've got a question on a Harrelson apple tree. We planted one about 2 years ago, and it's now being very prolific as far as its growth. It's got like 18 apples on it, and it's bending over. Is it okay to, number one, to take some of the apples off or to, you know, trim it or tighten it up, you know, stake it up? And when is the proper time to trim an apple tree?
Okay, great questions. Harrelson apple is one of our older apples released by the University of Minnesota. I want to say the year 1922 is when it was released, and it was named after one of our fruit farm leaders, Dr. Harrelson. It's a young tree, so chances are it doesn't have a lot of structure yet. Sounds like it's got a nice round of first apples. You can do a couple different things. You can stake it up. Sometimes I've seen people just use simply PVC. Doesn't look really good, but to just hold those lower branches up, you can just take lengths of PVC and put on, you know, elbows and then straight down to the ground and kind of create a cage for the tree that way. It's a little weird, but it works. Otherwise, you can use just rebar. Rebar is great for trees because it's so strong, it won't bend over, versus like a bamboo pole. And you can remove some of the apples if you want, but with 18 apples, I'd be hesitant to do that. That sounds like kind of a nice crop for this year. So I would try to do any kind of staking that's possible. And you want to be careful that you don't use like a wire around the branch itself. So you can buy coated wire that's got like a rubber over it. You can purchase, you can slide on rubber tubing on the wire so that it cushions the tree itself. So otherwise you'll be causing girdling, which means that the wire starts to kind of dig into the branch or into the stem of the tree. You don't want that to happen. So you coat it, you put a pad around it, so to speak, like a piece of tubing, or whether it's plastic tubing or if it's a rubber tubing as well, too. You can probably find exactly what you need on a website about caring for trees. Your other question was when to prune an apple tree, and that's a really important part of managing apples, particularly production apples in your yard. We have a great website on apple care on our fruit section of Yard and Garden, but in a nutshell, you want to prune that apple tree when it's dormant. So this is late winter, March, late February, anytime in that time of year. And you want to prune it thinking about structure. You want to have a nice leader in the center, a main stem. And then you want to have branches coming off at either side. And any branches that are crossing, any branches that are damaged should be removed. And you also want to look for the structure of that tree. You want to have kind of a series of branches that help support the tree. So take a look at that webpage. That'll show you examples of that. And then we also have some good videos on pruning apple trees that you might want to watch too. There are three videos in the series. They're hosted by Annie Claude, who is a former Extension fruit educator, and Dave Bedford, who's one of our researchers out at the Horticulture Research Center at the Arboretum. He's an apple expert. So take a look at that information. That will help you with kind of guiding on pruning, and then also review information on pest management. We have a great page on pest management of apples, too. So good
great
luck.
Resource.
That sounds fabulous.
Yeah. extension.umn.edu. And Julie, like a lot of our listeners know, that besides answering lawn and garden questions, you play in a group called the Abiders, and I do believe you're going to be active today.
Yes, we are. Yeah, we're going to be in Long Lake, Minnesota at Buckhorn Days. We play 5 to 7 p.m., but there are lots of other great bands playing before us and afterwards, and there's a lot of great activities for families at Buckhorn Days. So please come out and see us. Tomorrow we'll be at the Arboretum at Music in the Garden from 1:30 to 3 p.m. on the terrace behind the restaurant, behind the Oswald Visitor Center. So I hope to see some of our listeners there, too. So it should be a lot of fun.
That is a lot of fun. Been there. All right, Julie, hang on. We'll pick up right after the forecast, which looks like another hot one. So stay with us here on News Talk A3O. This is WCCO. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here, along with Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M, answering those lawn and garden questions. And Julie, as usual, lots of them. But I always like to, at least at this point in the show, I always ask you, because there's so much going on at the Arboretum, tell us what is going on lately.
Well, I'm going to put a plug in for our weekly themes out at the farm at the Arb. So this is a really exciting fun things to do on Saturdays. They're on all the Saturdays of summer through September 7th. Today is garlic harvest. So these are cases where you get in with your general admission. They're family friendly. They're drop-in activities. You don't have to have a reservation for the activity in particular. You just need to have your ticket to get in. And today is garlic. June 20th is pickle day. We've got a potato dig on July 27th. We have honey harvest and flowers for pollinators on August 3rd, which, by the way, I will be out at the Foodscape, which is at the farm, and answering people's questions if folks want to drop on by. Sunflowers, kernza, soybean, corn, and we wind up the season with harvesting sugar beets. So this is a great, really fun thing to do with families. It helps us connect plant to plate and helps people get to taste food. There's a lot of hands-on fun, all sorts of great things to do. So there's cooking demos and tastings. There's also a great group of vendors who are going to be out there with all their Minnesota-made items. And so we encourage people to come on out, bring your kids, bring your families, friends, and join in the fun, connecting your plant to plate, and visit with the vendors and have a wonderful time. So I think it's going to dry out by the time this starts. So that should be great.
It is such a great resource. We are so lucky to have that out there. And I know you feel pretty lucky, too, having an office there.
I do. Yeah. I do. What a great place to go to work when you're a horticulturist.
Absolutely. All right, Julie, back to work we go. Texter says this, I have four squash plants, all male flowers. Should I pull them off? Is there some reason why they would only produce male flowers? Same thing happened last year.
I do not know why they just produce male flowers. So some people may not be familiar with the fact that squash and melons and cucumbers all produce male and female flowers. When you lack fruit, it's because your plant has been producing mostly male flowers. How do you tell the difference? If you look at the bottom, the base of a flower, and you see a bulge at the bottom, that is a female flower. That's a fertilized ovary, which is ultimately going to become the fruit, and that's the part we eat of the plant. So you need to have both. Bees are important also for cross-pollinating those flowers, bringing that pollen from the male plants over to the female plants to pollinate them, and then therefore we get the fruit. Sometimes you just don't get good luck with those flowers, and you end up with mostly male flowers. I don't know why that happens. 2 years in a row, not sure why. But I would say maybe try a new variety if you haven't, if you've been kind of planting the same one. Maybe try a new variety and see if that offers you more fruit in the end.
Okay. Another texter says this, Julie, my moss roses are blooming and healthy, but the green leaves are mostly turning a deep burgundy. Why? What does that mean?
Oh, that could be a lack of nutrition, so you might want to give it a little shot of fertilizer. It can also be a little sun damage if they've been in the sun. I know that they are a full sun plant, but it could be that they're changing in that respect. They might also be the variety of moss roses that has a little bit of color in the leaves.
Okay. A lot of text messages. Here's another one. How long should I wait before replacing a tree near the old root? Will the old root interfere with the replacement's growth?
It depends if you've ground out the stump. So if you've just cut the tree down and the stump is still there breaking down, it's going to be a long time before you can plant another tree in that location. If you've had it ground out, you still have not gotten all the roots out. So the roots are still decomposing below the surface of the soil. You might see mushrooms popping up here and there, and those are mushrooms that are popping up. They're the fruiting bodies of some mycelium that's decomposing, helping to decompose those roots. So I think it kind of depends on the situation in that respect. If it's open and you can dig, you can go ahead and probably plant another tree there. Well, I would say, you know, maybe later this season, and go ahead and plant that. Otherwise, you might want to just move it a little bit. Maybe that former tree wasn't in the ideal situation. I would look at also being sure that you're picking a tree out that's going to be the right size for that location. Maybe you need a bigger tree. Maybe you need a smaller tree. Maybe you want to adjust the location so that it offers shade to a patio that's nearby. So take a look at the situation. Take advantage of it, too, and see if there's a little tweaking that you can do with your location of your new tree. But keep planting trees. They're really important to our landscape.
Absolutely. Listener wants to know, what's eating my dahlias? It's not slugs.
I don't know without looking at them. It could be a beetle that's eating them. It could have been sawflies eating them. It could be any number of things. But unless you can catch the culprit, it's hard to identify that.
Okay. This listener says, we bought chicken fertilizer, better known as coop poop, and I don't know the best way to use it. Afraid we might burn the plants if we top dress it.
Well, good idea to be cautious with it, because sometimes if you purchased it, usually it's composted enough. But you might want to, if there's no instructions on the information on the packaging on how to use it, then I would go back to the manufacturer. You probably find them online and see if there's instructions or tips for that. There usually is.
Okay. Our son, Texter says, has conquered grapevines, which we enjoy making jelly from. He successfully killed the creeping Charlie in that area. Does the chemical he used affect the fruit, or can we make jelly again this year?
If the plant is healthy, yes, you should be able to use that as well, the fruit, again, for jelly or the juice. That shouldn't be a problem. It depends on his chemical. If he successfully killed it, he probably used a triclopyr product. You can always read the information. It depends also when he killed it, if he killed it this year, if he killed it recently, or if he killed it last year. So read the information on the packaging and note whether it says there's any issues with being around a grapevine or an edible vine at that point.
Okay. Julia, a listener says, what causes my hibiscus plants to get dry yellow leaves? Too much water or not enough?
It can be either. Yellow leaves are a sign of overwatering. There can also be a sign of underwatering. And so I would say go down to the soil and the container that they're growing in. I don't know if it's a perennial hibiscus you're talking about or a tropical hibiscus. But in either case, look at the soil. And if it's very, very wet, or if it's a tropical hibiscus and it's in a container and it's not draining well, then that would be your clue that it's getting too much water. But if the soil is hard, if it's very, very drying, if it's very sandy, it could be that there is not enough water. I'm guessing also that these are leaves that maybe are just aging and they're just dropping off. That could be also the case as well. So kind of take a look at the soil and figure out, you know, is it getting too much water or not enough water?
Okay. Listener says, written this in, my friend bought a twin home which has a large lilac hedge on one side. The hedge is about 8 or more feet tall, many dead branches in the hedge. Is it better to take the hedge down to, say, 4 feet, or is it better just to take out all the dead branches?
I think it depends on the end result. So if your friend wants to keep a tall hedge that's 8 feet tall, then I would take out all the dead branches. If they want to thin the hedge and maybe make it more productive, they could go ahead and cut it down all the way to about 12 inches or so. It's called coppicing. And then the new branches would emerge from the base and create, you know, a more robust hedge. However, you're not going to have a hedge for quite a few years until those plants grow, probably 2 or 3 years. So think about the end result. If you need that privacy, then I would go ahead and prune out the dead. And then I would also look at pruning out maybe some of the largest stems, just because that encourages those smaller stems that are there to be more productive. But if you really want to renovate, you can coppice that down. We actually have 3 nice videos on shrub pruning and harvest, and there's information on how to coppice a plant in those videos. That's on our extension page at extension.umn.edu, and it's under our trees and shrubs section of Yard and Garden.
Okay. Before the break, Julie, let's grab a couple of phone calls. Catherine in Blaine is first up here. Catherine, good morning. What is your question?
Good morning. I have 2 geraniums. Neither one of them, they bloomed when I bought them. They haven't bloomed since I bought them. They're on the north side. Do I need to put them on, like, I have an east side? Because they usually bloom when I put them on the east side. But I've never had that before. So can you tell me what's going on with it? Or?
Sure. So these are garden geraniums. So these are sometimes they're called ball geraniums. They have the round heads. It sounds like they're annuals. Annual geraniums require full sun. So the more sun you give them, the better they're going to bloom. So I would move them to that east side and make sure they're getting good morning sun. And also be sure that you're deadheading them. You probably are, but removing the old flowers off of them. And I think that once you move them into the sun, they're going to start to produce for you.
Okay. One more call before we break. Maria's checking in from Buffalo. Maria, good morning. What is your question for Julie?
Yes, good morning, Julie. I absolutely enjoy your program. Every Saturday we tune in. My question is, we have a plum tree that was loaded with plums, and they have begun to fall to the ground. And my question is, we have a plum tree that was loaded with plums, and they have begun to fall to the ground. Any questions why this might be happening?
When a plant drops fruit, it can be for a couple reasons. If they're just dropping the fruit and the fruit is fine, there's no problems with it. It can be that the plant is kind of self-pruning it, that it hasn't got enough energy to hang on to that fruit. So it may start to drop them that way. Other things that might be happening is, again, thinking about the weather that we've had. We've had a lot of rain. We've had a lot of wind. The wind may have loosened that fruit, and it may be falling just because it's weakened. If the fruit is damaged, it would be a pest or disease issue, and that would be a good thing to get some of those diseased fruits. If you look at them, they have holes in them. They're either shriveled up. That might be a problem too, and that you could find out what's wrong with those fruits, maybe what's going on. And we have a great tool on our website called Ask a Master Gardener or Ask Extension, and you can take pictures of that fruit and go ahead and email it to the master gardeners who are waiting to answer questions for people. So that's an option. If the tree overall is healthy and it's just dropping fruit, I'm going to say there's some stress that's going on. It just can't hang on to all that fruit. And so it's just kind of self-pruning and dropping out some of that fruit. So hopefully it will stop doing that and you'll have some fruit that you'll be able to harvest.
Very good. Hang on, Julie. We'll take this quick break. Be right back for the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday on CCO in the 8 o'clock hour, answering those lawn and garden questions today. Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. Julie, I know we're going to get back to some text questions here, but you wanted to kind of revisit the plum question we had earlier.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Maria's plum tree just a little bit more and fruit trees in general. So I've just been looking through our fruit section on Yard and Garden, and that's if you are growing a fruit tree like the gentleman who had the Harrelson apple tree and Maria who has the plum tree, take a look at this section of our website. This is growing fruit is really particular. It's a specialty. And so take a look at this information to help you with things like when to prune, the types and varieties of plants that are available for Minnesota gardeners, the cultivars of apples, cultivars of prune or of plums, and then also what to do if you do see things like fruit drop. So in some cases, plants self-prune. They can't hang on to so much fruit, and that might just be it's just a situation that they're in. They're in a stress situation, and they just need to drop some of the fruit. But there also might be a pest issue, and so gather up some of that fruit, take a look at it. If it looks perfect, I would kind of say that it's fruit drop. But these web pages have a lot of information on not just how to grow the plants, but also how to care for them. So I would really strongly recommend anybody who's growing fruit in their backyard to go ahead and take a look at these web pages under fruit, and it's under Yard and Garden at extension.umn.edu.
Very good. Thanks for backtracking on that. Julie, this listener says, I've read that removing the flowers on hostas help the plant remain healthier for the rest of the season. Is that true?
Well, it's interesting because there are people who do not like the hosta flowers. My friend Ruth is one of those, and I'm always shaking my head like, that's one of the best parts about the plant. But she likes the leaves. I like the whole plant. Removing the dead, spent blossoms is the best use of your time, and that is to ensure that any energy that the plant is putting out is that's putting it back into the roots and back into the leaves. So I wouldn't remove the blooming flowers. They're great for bees. They look wonderful. Some are fragrant, but once they're spent, once they've stopped blooming and dropped their flowers, then go ahead and prune off those long stems. Get down deep into the into the leaves and prune those off and then compost those. But hostas give us a number of really great benefits in our landscape. So the flowers are not going to have a negative effect on the hosta.
Okay. Listener says, my maple tree leaves have been changing color since the middle of June. It's half of the tree. The leaves don't fall off until when the rest of the leaves fall. This has been happening for maybe 4 years, but this year more of the tree leaves have turned brownish red color. Do you have any idea what would be causing this?
So early color in maples is usually a sign of environmental stress. So this means the plant is in difficult soil. It's been planted in tough soil. It may have stem girdling roots. It may be too dry. Maples like acidic soil. It might be a really high alkaline soil. So you need to kind of identify that. If it's a mature tree or a tree that you're really concerned about, you can go ahead and contact and hire a certified arborist. And we have a good webpage on that on our trees and shrubs section. And you can ask, it has good questions to ask. And then also to bring somebody in there who can assess the tree at that situation. So usually when maple trees turn color early, it's due to stress.
Okay. Julie, we have less than 2 minutes to go, about a minute and a half. This season so far, Texter says, have found 4 Japanese beetles on our plants. Are we just fortunate, or does the rain affect their population?
Well, it's hard to say what affects their population, but like any insect, their populations go up and down depending on conditions. Like they mentioned the rain, could have been the really dry conditions from last year. We didn't have a lot of grubs because of the dry conditions. We're not really sure. We're grateful when there's few of them, but they are, they're a problem that we deal with at this time of year through August, and hand pick those off. When you find them, destroy them, and then just keep an eye on that. And the population may go up a little bit, but you might just be fortunate this year to not. We don't have a big population of Japanese beetles.
30 seconds, and we're done. Julie, get to see the arbiters today. When and where?
Long Lake Buckhorn Days in Long Lake, Minnesota, and we'll be at the Arboretum tomorrow at Music in the Garden. And if you didn't get your question answered, visit extension.umn.edu, go to Yard and Garden, and we have Ask a Master Gardener where you can send in images and have Master Gardeners help you with your problems.
As I said earlier, it is a tremendous resource, extension.umn.edu. Break a leg today, Julie. Have fun,
Thanks.
And we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Denny.
Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota. In the Twin Cities, 76 degrees. You could be experiencing some thunderstorm activity right now. Mostly sunny skies later. We could get another round of rain overnight. It will be near 91 today. Right now, though, thunderstorms in some areas of the Twin Cities, 76 degrees. Home improvement next hour on 830 WCCO. Yes, indeed. Good morning. I am joined this morning from the University of Minnesota by Julie Weisenhorn. Julie, good morning.
Hey, Denny. Good morning to you.
It's, well, we're getting some showers here in our neighborhood. I don't know if it's raining where you are.
Yeah, thunderstorms.
A few thunderstorms. It's amazing. Now, again, every area is different, and somebody who lives in a certain part of CCO land who is inundated and their lawns are still mushy, I'm amazed at how fast it dries out here.
Yeah, that's a good sign, I guess, because if we were sitting in, you know, continually wet conditions, it could be really tough on our landscapes and tough on us, too.
Yeah.
So it is good to see that things did dry out a little bit before we got this next flush of rain.
Absolutely. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, you want to talk with Julie by phone or text, here's the number to do it, 651-461-9226, 651-461-9226. Texter says this a moment ago, our native lilac bushes have brown leaves. What can I use to prevent further die-off and spread? What causes this? I guess there should have been a period there. What causes this and how to prevent it? We have dozens of native lilacs throughout our 3 acres in Anoka County. Not all of the bushes show signs of it yet.
Well, it could be a number of things. So when you think about, when you have issues like that with particularly long-lived plants like lilacs, they're not actually native to Minnesota, but they will experience leaf spot diseases, which can cause the leaves to turn brown or turn yellow and drop off. And you have to think about the conditions that they're growing in. So last few years, we had a lot of stress on our woody plants, trees, shrubs, vines, woody vines. And then we came into this year, we had a mild winter, and then we came into a lot of rain and pretty cool and very windy conditions. So the cool, windy, wet conditions and having stressed plants coming into our season are a really great formula for all sorts of stress on our plants. For example, we mentioned the lilacs. Lilac powdery mildew might be worse on common lilacs this year because of the conditions. That wind is blowing spores around, the moisture is carrying it, the rain is carrying it. They're creating a really great condition for growing fungal and bacterial leaf spot diseases. I'm guessing that might be the case with these lilacs. And the easiest thing to do is, if you have dieback like that, is to clean it up when it drops to the ground and get it away from the plants. And then to be sure that you're treating these plants with a little extra TLC. Maybe they need to be mulched. Maybe they're not mulched. That helps a lot with protecting the roots. Maybe they need to be fertilized. A lot of times we kind of forget about lilacs and forget to fertilize them. And just giving them a little bit more TLC so that you can help them get through this more stressful time. And now we have plants that are also going into flood damage too. And I wanted to call out a really great webpage that we have on our Yard and Garden page called How to Manage Flood Damage to Trees. It's a very comprehensive webpage. It talks about timing of flooding, effects of flooding, and how to help trees recover from flooding. So that could be the case too. Those lilacs may be in poorly drained soil, and that soil is holding a lot of water, and those shrubs are really under stress now, but in the opposite way that they were last year. Last year was drought, this year it's wetness. So I would say check that, clean up the leaves that drop And then also be sure that you've pruned those lilacs to encourage good airflow and light to get to the canopies.
Speaking of fertilizing, I see a question about when is the best time to fertilize evergreens?
Evergreens can be fertilized throughout the season. You want to stop fertilizing any woody plants, trees and shrubs, around August, because we don't want to encourage new growth that fertilizer might cause or might, you know, prompt. So we want to cut back on fertilizing trees and shrubs in August and allow those plants to then gradually go into dormancy without a lot of new growth on them, which wouldn't survive the winter.
Since this is our Smart Garden Show, I noticed a text from someone hoping you will mention the 27th Annual Minnesota Water Garden Society Pond and Garden Tour.
Yeah, that sounds like fun.
July 27 and 28.
Great.
So there you go. Annual Minnesota Water Garden Society.
Does
I'm sure
say
you
a
can
location?
Google that. No, let's see. No, it does not.
Okay.
But you can visit their website, mwgs.org.
There you go. Yeah,
and
the
they'll
website,
let you know
the details.
Here's an interesting text about lawns. Does mowing your grass when it's wet have any positive or negative impacts?
It has a negative impact, and that is in compacting the soil. So as you roll your mower, big or small, back and forth over your lawn, you're compressing and compacting that soil. And that can also damage the crowns of the grass plants. We don't think about grass plants as really having a crown, but they do. And it sits right at the soil surface. And as you roll over that and those plants are wet, the soil they do, and it sits right at the soil surface. And as you roll over that and those plants are wet, the soil is wet, you're compacting that down and that can affect the crowns as well. So you want to wait until your lawn is dried out, at least the top inch or so, and then go ahead and do your mowing.
Julie, about lawns, this is the time of year, and of course, looking at that forecast with 90s predicted today and tomorrow, and actually close to that on Monday, my lawn, it looks like it's going dormant. That's kind of typical, isn't it?
Yeah, that's typical for our grasses. Our grasses in Minnesota are cool season grasses, meaning that they grow actively in the spring and then again in the fall. That makes fall a really great time to do a lot of maintenance on your lawn, such as aeration, fertilization, also treatment of any broadleaf weeds, because they're doing the same thing. They're actively growing, and that's a good time to do that as well. Keep mowing your lawn. Now they become dormant. They're moving into dormancy, and that means that they're not growing as much. So you may be able to cut back on your mowing as we move into warmer weather. And your lawn may not look quite as bright green. We've had these very vivid lawns this spring.
Yeah, for sure.
With all the rain. And now you might see it start to kind of dim down a little bit. And that's normal. That's just the plant not really putting out a lot of new growth. And so raise your mower. That's a really easy thing to do. It's a really important thing to do, to allow for as much of those grass blades to be present and to be photosynthesizing, getting as much energy as possible down into the roots and creating a really good, strong lawn that's going to endure tougher conditions that it might have in the future.
Excellent. If you're just joining us, Julie Weisenor from the U of M answering those lawn and garden questions on our Smart Garden Show. Call or text Julie, 651-461-9226. Right now in the Twin Cities, you could be experiencing some showers or thunderstorms. Our current temperature reading now in the metro, 76 degrees. Stay with us. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, welcoming your calls or your text messages for Julie Weisenhorn this morning from the U of M. 651-461-9226. Julie, as usual, we have callers, we have texters.
And
in a moment, I want to ask you about the Abiders when you guys are playing. I think it's soon. Let's grab a phone call. Dorothy is first up here from Minneapolis. Dorothy, hi. What's your question, please?
Good morning. I'm late in trimming off the old blooms of my lilacs. I've got two Korean lilac shrubs, Is it too late to do it? And what's going to happen now? How would I trim them now when I'm so late?
So, good question, Dorothy. Lilacs need to be trimmed within roughly 2 to 3 weeks after they bloom, because they start to set buds for next year. So if you are late in pruning them off, you can kind of back up in your calendar and think about when they were last blooming. You may be pruning off some flower buds for next year. You might have a reduced amount of bloom next year, but you should take them off. You can simply deadhead them and then shape the tree as needed. If you've got kind of a wanky branch sticking out, you might want to cut that one back. I know Korean lilacs usually have a really nice rounded form. So go ahead and prune off some of those dead lilacs at this time. You can use a shear, whether it's a manual or electric. That works really well. Or you can just go ahead and, like I do, just pick through it with a pruners and just snip those off.
All right, very good. Thank you, Dorothy. Let's get another phone call in here. David is calling in from Madison Lake, I believe. Hi, David. What is your question, please?
Yes, I've got a question on a Harrelson apple tree. We planted one about 2 years ago, and it's now being very prolific as far as its growth. It's got like 18 apples on it, and it's bending over. Is it okay to, number one, to take some of the apples off, or to, you know, trim it or tighten it up, you know, stake it up? And when is the proper time to trim an apple tree?
Okay, great questions. Harrelson apple is one of our older apples released by the University of Minnesota. I want to say the year 1922 is when it was released, and it was named after one of our fruit farm leaders, Dr. Harrelson. It's a young tree, so chances are it doesn't have a lot of structure yet. Sounds like it's got a nice round of first apples. You can do a couple different things. You can stake it up. Sometimes I've seen people just use simply PVC, doesn't look really good, but to just hold those lower branches up, you can just take lengths of PVC and put on, you know, elbows and then straight down to the ground and kind of create a cage for the tree that way. It's a little weird, but it works. Otherwise, you can use just rebar. Rebar is great for trees because it's so strong, it won't bend over, versus like a bamboo pole. And, you can remove some of the apples if you want, but with 18 apples, I'd be hesitant to do that. That sounds like kind of a nice crop for this year. So I would try to do any kind of staking that's possible. And you want to be careful that you don't use like a wire around the branch itself. So you can buy coated wire that's got like a rubber over it. You can purchase, you can slide on rubber tubing on the wire so that it cushions the tree itself. So otherwise you'll be causing girdling, which means that the wire starts to kind of dig into the branch or into the stem of the tree. You don't want that to happen. So you coat it, you put a pad around it, so to speak, like a piece of tubing, or whether it's plastic tubing or if it's a rubber tubing as well too. You can probably find exactly what you need on a website about caring for trees. Your other question was when to prune an apple tree, and that's a really important part of managing apples, particularly production apples in your yard. We have a great website on apple care on our fruit section of Yard and Garden, but in a nutshell, you want to prune that apple tree when it's dormant. So this is late winter, March, late February, anytime in that time of year, and you want to prune it thinking about structure. You want to have a nice leader in the center, a main stem, and then you want to have branches coming off at either side. And any branches that are crossing, any branches that are damaged should be removed. And you also want to look for the structure of that tree. You want to have kind of a series of branches that help support the tree. So take a look at that webpage. That'll show you examples of that. And then we also have some good videos on pruning apple trees that you might want to watch too. There are three videos in the series. They're hosted by Annie Claude, who is a former Extension fruit educator, and Dave Bedford, who's one of our researchers out at the Horticulture Research Center at the Arboretum. He's an apple expert. So take a look at that information. That will help you with kind of guiding on pruning, and then also review information on pest management. We have a great page on pest management of apples, too. So good
great
luck.
Resource.
That sounds fabulous.
Yeah. extension.umn.edu. And Julie, like a lot of our listeners know, that besides answering lawn and garden questions, you play in a group called the Abiders, and I do believe you're going to be active today.
Yes, we are. Yeah, we're going to be in Long Lake, Minnesota at Buckhorn Days. We play 5 to 7 p.m., but there are lots of other great bands playing before us and afterwards, and there's a lot of great activities for families at Buckhorn Days. So please come out and see us. Tomorrow we'll be at the Arboretum at Music in the Garden from 1:30 to 3 p.m. on the terrace behind the restaurant, behind the Oswald Visitor Center. So I hope to see some of our listeners there, too. So it should be a lot of fun.
That is a lot of fun. Been there. All right, Julie, hang on. We'll pick up right after the forecast, which looks like another hot one. So stay with us here on News Talk A3O. This is WCCO. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here, along with Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M, answering those lawn and garden questions. And Julie, as usual, lots of them. But I always like to, at least at this point in the show, I always ask you, because there's so much going on at the Arboretum, tell us what is going on lately.
Well, I'm going to put a plug in for our weekly themes out at the farm at the Arb. So this is a really exciting fun things to do on Saturdays. They're on all the Saturdays of summer through September 7th. Today is garlic harvest. So these are cases where you get in with your general admission. They're family friendly. They're drop-in activities. You don't have to have a reservation for the activity in particular. You just need to have your ticket to get in. And today is garlic. June 20th is pickle day. We've got a potato dig on July 27th. We have honey harvest and flowers for pollinators on August 3rd, which, by the way, I will be out at the Foodscape, which is at the farm, and answering people's questions if folks want to drop on by. Sunflowers, kernza, soybean, corn, and we wind up the season with harvesting sugar beets. So this is a great, really fun thing to do with families. It helps us connect plant to plate and helps people get to taste food. There's a lot of hands-on fun, all sorts of great things to do. So there's cooking demos and tastings. There's also a great group of vendors who are going to be out there with all their Minnesota-made items. And so we encourage people to come on out, bring your kids, bring your families, friends, and join in the fun, connecting your plant to plate, and visit with the vendors and have a wonderful time. So I think it's going to dry out by the time this starts. So that should be great.
It is such a great resource. We are so lucky to have that out there. And I know you feel pretty lucky, too, having an office there.
I do. Yeah. I do. What a great place to go to work when you're a horticulturist.
Absolutely. All right, Julie, back to work we go. Texter says this, I have 4 squash plants, all male flowers. Should I pull them off? Is there some reason why they would only produce male flowers? Same thing happened last year.
I do not know why they just produce male flowers. So some people may not be familiar with the fact that squash and melons and cucumbers all produce male and female flowers. When you lack fruit, it's because your plant has been producing mostly male flowers. How do you tell the difference? If you look at the bottom, the base of a flower, and you see a bulge at the bottom, that is a female flower. That's a fertilized ovary, which is ultimately going to become the fruit, and that's the part we eat of the plant. So you need to have both. Bees are important also for cross-pollinating those flowers, bringing that pollen from the male plants over to the female plants to pollinate them, and then therefore we get the fruit. Sometimes you just don't get good luck with those flowers, and you end up with mostly male flowers. I don't know why that happens. 2 years in a row, not sure why. But I would say maybe try a new variety if you haven't, if you've been kind of planting the same one. maybe try a new variety and see if that offers you more fruit in the end.
Okay. Another texter says this, Julie, my moss roses are blooming and healthy, but the green leaves are mostly turning a deep burgundy. Why? What does that mean?
Oh, that could be a lack of nutrition, so you might want to give it a little shot of fertilizer. It can also be a little sun damage if they've been in the sun. I know that they are a full sun plant, but it could be that they're changing in that respect. They might also be the variety of moss roses that has a little bit of color in the leaves.
Okay. A lot of text messages. Here's another one. How long should I wait before replacing a tree near the old root? Will the old root interfere with the replacement's growth?
It depends if you've ground out the stump. So if you've just cut the tree down and the stump is still there breaking down, it's going to be a long time before you can plant another tree in that location. If you've had it ground out, you still have not gotten all the roots out. So the roots are still decomposing below the surface of the soil. You might see mushrooms popping up here and there, and those are mushrooms that are popping up. They're the fruiting bodies of some mycelium that's decomposing, helping to decompose those roots. So I think it kind of depends on the situation in that respect. If it's open and you can dig, you can go ahead and probably plant another tree there. Well, I would say, you know, maybe later this season, and go ahead and plant that. Otherwise, you might want to just move it a little bit. Maybe that former tree wasn't in the ideal situation. I would look at also being sure that you're picking a tree out that's going to be the right size for that location. Maybe you need a bigger tree. Maybe you need a smaller tree. Maybe you want to adjust the location so that it offers shade to a patio that's nearby. So take a look at the situation. Take advantage of it, too, and see if there's a little tweaking that you can do with your location of your new tree. But keep planting trees. They're really important to our landscape.
Absolutely. Listener wants to know, what's eating my dahlias? It's not slugs.
I don't know without looking at them. It could be a beetle that's eating them. It could have been sawflies eating them. It could be any number of things. But unless you can catch the culprit, it's hard to identify that.
Okay. This listener says, we bought chicken fertilizer, better known as coop poop, and I don't know the best way to use it. Afraid we might burn the plants if we top dress it.
Well, good idea to be cautious with it, because sometimes if you purchased it, usually it's composted enough. But you might want to, if there's no instructions on the information on the packaging on how to use it, then I would go back to the manufacturer. You could probably find them online and see if there's instructions or tips for that. There usually is.
Okay. Our son, texter says, has conquered grapevines, which we enjoy making jelly from. He successfully killed the creeping Charlie in that area. Does the chemical he used affect the fruit, or can we make jelly again this year?
If the plant is healthy, yes, you should be able to use that as well, the fruit, again, for jelly or the juice. That shouldn't be a problem. It depends on his chemical. If he successfully killed it, he probably used a triclopyr product. You can always read the information. It depends also when he killed it, if he killed it this year, if he killed it recently, or if he killed it last year. So read the information on the packaging and note whether it says there's any issues with being around a grapevine or an edible vine at that point.
Okay. Julie, a listener says, what causes my hibiscus plants to get dry yellow leaves? Too much water or not enough?
It can be either. Yellow leaves are a sign of overwatering. There can also be a sign of underwatering. And so I would say go down to the soil and the container that they're growing in. I don't know if it's a perennial hibiscus you're talking about or a tropical hibiscus. But in either case, look at the soil. And if it's very, very wet, or if it's a tropical hibiscus and it's in a container and it's not draining well, then that would be your clue that it's getting too much water. But if the soil is hard, if it's very, very drying, if it's very sandy, it could be that there is not enough water. I'm guessing also that these are leaves that maybe are just aging and they're just dropping off. That could be also the case as well. So kind of take a look at the soil. and figure out, you know, is it getting too much water or not enough water?
Okay. Listener says, written this in, my friend bought a twin home which has a large lilac hedge on one side. The hedge is about 8 or more feet tall. Many dead branches in the hedge. Is it better to take the hedge down to, say, 4 feet, or is it better just to take out all the dead branches?
I think it depends on the end result. So if your friend wants to keep a tall hedge that's 8 feet tall, then I would take out all the dead branches. If they want to thin the hedge and maybe make it more productive, they could go ahead and cut it down all the way to about 12 inches or so. It's called coppicing. And then the new branches would emerge from the base and create, you know, a more robust hedge. However, you're not going to have a hedge for quite a few years until those plants grow, probably 2 or 3 years. So think about the end result. If you need that privacy, then I would go ahead and prune out the dead. And then I would also look at pruning out maybe some of the largest stems, just because that encourages those smaller stems that are there to be more productive. But if you really want to renovate, you can coppice that down. We actually have 3 nice videos on shrub pruning and harvest, and there's information on how to coppice a plant in those videos. That's on our extension page at extension.umn.edu, and it's under our trees and shrubs section of Yard and Garden.
Okay. Before the break, Julie, let's grab a couple of phone calls. Catherine in Blaine is first up here. Catherine, good morning. What is your question?
Good morning. I have 2 geraniums. Neither one of them, they bloomed when I bought them. They haven't bloomed since I bought them. They're on the north side. Do I need to put them on, like, I have an east side? Because they usually bloom when I put them on the east side. But I've never had that before. So can you tell me what's going on with it? Or?
Sure. So these are garden geraniums. So these are sometimes they're called ball geraniums. They have the round heads. It sounds like they're annuals. Annual geraniums require full sun. So the more sun you give them, the better they're going to bloom. So I would move them to that east side and make sure they're getting good morning sun. And also be sure that you're deadheading them. You probably are, but removing the old flowers off of them. And I think that once you move them into the sun, they're going to start to produce for you.
Okay. One more call before we break. Maria's checking in from Buffalo. Maria, good morning. What is your question for Julie?
Yes, good morning, Julie. I absolutely enjoy your program. Every Saturday we tune in. My question is, we have a plum tree that was loaded with plums, and they have begun to fall to the ground. And my question is, we have a plum tree that was loaded with plums, and they have begun to fall to the ground. Any questions why this might be happening?
When a plant drops fruit, it can be for a couple reasons. If they're just dropping the fruit and the fruit is fine, there's no problems with it. It can be that the plant is kind of self-pruning it, that it hasn't got enough energy to hang on to that fruit. So it may start to drop them that way. Other things that might be happening is, again, thinking about the weather that we've had. We've had a lot of rain. We've had a lot of wind. The wind may have loosened that fruit, and it may be falling just because it's weakened. If the fruit is damaged, it would be a pest or disease issue, and that would be a good thing to get some of those diseased fruits. If you look at them, they have holes in them. They're either shriveled up. That might be a problem too, and that you could find out what's wrong with those fruits, maybe what's going on. And we have a great tool on our website called Ask a Master Gardener or Ask Extension, and you can take pictures of that fruit and go ahead and email it to the master gardeners who are waiting to answer questions for people. So that's an option. If the tree overall is healthy and it's just dropping fruit, I'm going to say there's some stress that's going on. It just can't hang on to all that fruit. And so it's just kind of self-pruning and dropping out some of that fruit. So hopefully it will stop doing that and you'll have some fruit that you'll be able to harvest.
Very good. Hang on, Julie. We'll take this quick break. Be right back for the remaining minutes of our Smart Garden Show here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday on CCO in the 8 o'clock hour, answering those lawn and garden questions today. Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. Julie, I know we're going to get back to some text questions here, but you wanted to kind of revisit the plum question we had earlier.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Maria's plum tree just a little bit more and fruit trees in general. So I've just been looking through our fruit section on Yard and Garden, and that's if you are growing a fruit tree like the gentleman who had the Harrelson apple tree and Maria who has the plum tree, take a look at this section of our website. This is growing fruit is really particular. It's a specialty. And so take a look at this information to help you with things like when to prune, the types and varieties of plants that are available for Minnesota gardeners, the cultivars of apples, cultivars of prune or of plums, and then also what to do if you do see things like fruit drop. So in some cases, plants self-prune. They can't hang on to so much fruit. And that might just be, it's just a situation that they're in. They're in a stress situation and they just need to drop some of the fruit. But there also might be a pest issue. And so gather up some of that fruit, take a look at it. If it looks perfect, I would kind of say that it's fruit drop. But these web pages have a lot of information on not just how to grow the plants, but also how to care for them. So I would really strongly recommend anybody who's growing fruit in their backyard to go ahead and take a look at these web pages under fruit, and it's under Yard and Garden at extension.umn.edu.
Very good. Thanks for backtracking on that. Julie, this listener says, I've read that removing the flowers on hostas help the plant remain healthier for the rest of the season. Is that true?
Well, it's interesting because there are people who do not like the hosta flowers. My friend Ruth is one of those, and I'm always shaking my head like, that's one of the best parts about the plant. But she likes the leaves. I like the whole plant. Removing the dead, spent blossoms is the best use of your time, and that is to ensure that any energy that the plant is putting out is that's putting it back into the roots and back into the leaves. So I wouldn't remove the blooming flowers. They're great for bees. They look wonderful. Some are fragrant. But once they're spent, once they've stopped blooming and dropped their flowers, then go ahead and prune off those long stems. Get down deep into the leaves and prune those off and then compost those. But hostas give us a number of really great benefits in our landscape. So the flowers are not going to have a negative effect on the hosta.
Okay. Listener says, my maple tree leaves have been changing color since the middle of June. It's half of the tree. The leaves don't fall off until when the rest of the leaves fall. This has been happening for maybe 4 years. But this year, more of the tree leaves have turned brownish red color. Do you have any idea what would be causing this?
So early color in maples is usually a sign of environmental stress. So this means the plant is in difficult soil. It's been planted in tough soil. It may have stem girdling roots. It may be too dry. Maples like acidic soil. It might be a really high alkaline soil. So you need to kind of identify that. If it's a mature tree or a tree that you're really concerned about, you can go ahead and contact and hire a certified arborist. And we have a good webpage on that on our trees and shrubs section. And you can ask, it has good questions to ask, and then also to bring somebody in there who can assess the tree at that situation. So usually when maple trees turn color early, it's due to stress.
Okay. Julie, we have less than 2 minutes to go, about a minute and a half. This season so far, Texter says, have found 4 Japanese beetles on our plants. Are we just fortunate, or does the rain affect their population?
Well, it's hard to say what affects their population, but like any insect, their populations go up and down depending on conditions. Like they mentioned the rain, could have been the really dry conditions from last year. We didn't have a lot of grubs because of the dry conditions. We're not really sure. We're grateful when there's few of them. But they are, yep, they're a problem that we deal with at this time of year through August. And hand pick those off whenever you, when you find them, destroy them, and then just keep an eye on that. And the population may go up a little bit, but you might just be fortunate this year to not, we know that we don't have a big population of Japanese beetles.
30 seconds and we're done, Julie. Get to see the arboriders today. When and where?
Long Lake Buckhorn Days in Long Lake, Minnesota. And we'll be at the Arboretum tomorrow at Music in the Garden. And if you didn't get your question answered, visit extension.umn.edu. Go to Yard and Garden. And we have Ask a Master Gardener, where you can send in images and have master gardeners help you with your problems.
As I said earlier, it is a tremendous resource. Extension.umn.edu. Break a leg today, Julie. Have fun.
Thanks.
And we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Denny.
Julie Weisenhorn from the University of Minnesota. In the Twin Cities, 76 degrees. You could be experiencing some thunderstorm activity right now. Mostly sunny skies later. We could get another round of rain overnight. It will be near 91 today. Right now, though, thunderstorms in some areas of the Twin Cities, 76 degrees. Home improvement next hour on 830 WCCO.